now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Ruck, the podcast from The Times and The Sunday Times. And you might be able to hear that we're slightly different this week because we're out and about. The pod's on tour, Alex. Where are we? Give us the context.
Morning. Hello. We're on location. We're actually at the England Team Hotel in Richmond today, Monday morning. We're here to hear Eddie Jones announce his squad for the Australia tour. And we're going to sit out here in the sunshine and have a bit of a chin wag about all things that happened over a pretty busy weekend.
Yeah, I mean, two big games, one with slightly more sort of pressure and context that you were at, the Premiership Final. I was at the Barbarians game, but...
Well, you were at the Premiership Final as well.
Well, I was at the Premiership Final, which, if you can hear my voice, is slightly lower. It was actually my birthday on Sunday, and so I used the opportunity to go to the Prem Final with a few mates. So, yeah, Rory, Ben and Dave, they gave me a few beers, so there we go. But how was it from the press seats? It was an amazing finish, that. We'll get into the full context of it in a bit, but just a quick verdict on it.
Well, I loved it. I loved it in a different way to the reason I loved last year's final, which was open and attacking and high scoring, and this was completely the opposite. And it's one of the reasons we all love the game. I don't think I'd want every match to be played like that, but on a final day with everything at stake, it got to the point like an hour or so in where you felt that every battleground, that's what I wrote in the paper today, every battleground felt like it was going to turn the game. Every time the Saracens' maul defence won a turnover, you thought that's their route back in, and then Leicester got them back downfield again. I thought it was just a brilliant occasion. It wasn't sold out, which was disappointing, but the sight of must have been 50,000 Leicester fans come down the M1. The car park outside was great fun, music. It was a big festival, and the game, yeah, it wasn't a spectacle, but it was just so tight and intense and a real battle, and I loved it.
Whatever happens in matches, that's surely got to be the best way to win a cup, with a drop goal in the last 20 seconds, hasn't it? I mean, it was quite reminiscent. I was listening to some of the commentary from Five Live, and at the time, Chris Jones, who does their commentary, it sounded so similar to the Johnny drop goal, the way he was phrasing it, and it's 20 seconds on the clock, this is for the Premiership title, he's got it out, all that sort of stuff. It just must be the most exhilarating thing to do for someone like Freddie Burns, and actually him wheeling away. I was likening it with a couple of mates to when a bowler takes a wicket or there's an amazing catch and he just doesn't quite believe it and he doesn't know where to run, so it's just off. But he was also wrestling with himself, wasn't he? Because he was not sure whether to sort of shout at his teammates to catch the kickoff or just go mad.
Well, he was talking to them both at the same time. Yeah, as he said to us afterwards, the noises were coming out of his mouth that he's never heard before. because it was such a compelling game to me. And there were downsides to it, and I've seen people commenting about how scruffy and ugly it was. But for me, it was compelling, and the tension in it built and built and built. And for it to be won, whichever team was to win it, for it to be won at the death is the best way for a final to be settled, surely.
Yeah, so we'll talk a bit more about the Premiership Final and the England Barbarians game. And also, later on the podcast, we'll hear from Eddie Jones. He's picking his squad in a bit for the Australia tour, the three-test tour there, having just been roundly thrashed by the Barbarians, with George Cruz kicking three conversions. We'll also touch on a little bit of the URC, where the Storm has won that title. And also we'll wrap up with our God, Goddess or Devil of the Week. Probably not a devil, though, after some decent action over the weekend. But anyway, the first thing we will talk about after this little break will be the Premiership final. Right, so we're recording this on Monday morning, and if you're a Leicester Tigers fan, you are the champions of England for the first time since 2013. 15-12 was the victory. Freddie Burns' drop goal with about 21 seconds left on the clock. As we said at the top, what a way to win it.
Freddie's still out on the town, isn't
he? He's still out on the town, yeah. If anyone hasn't seen his Instagram stories, then get on there and see his progress. He's probably trying to break Alex Goode's record from that four-day bender after they won the European Cup.
Honestly, talking to him afterwards, though, like, it's just such a great story for him. He came in, we spoke to him, he'd given his short, he'd swapped his shorts with a fan to get his first pint, which he necked left-handed in the mouth of the Twickenham Tunnel, and came through, was holding a can of cider. He just, to start with, he couldn't explain quite what his emotions were. Like, a bit like he was on the field when he kicked the drop goal, it sort of wobbled over the bar, and he's punching the air, and then suddenly he realises there's 20 seconds left, there's going to be a restart. And as he said, you know, he's had his days when he's celebrated prematurely that afternoon with Bath, where he basically cost them a win against.
Dropped it over the line against Toulouse.
Dropped it over the line, cost them against Toulouse. He was sure that wasn't going to happen. And then afterwards, he's face down in the turf, sort of punching the Twickenham turf in bewilderment and bemusement and joy. I can't quite articulate what it all means. And he's the perfect kind of Premiership final hero for me, because the journey that he's been on, it was a decade ago he made his debut off the bench for England, and he's bounced around a bit, and he had a pretty unhappy time at Bath, and he only went to Bath as a make weight for George Ford going the other way. But he's a fans player, that's the only way I could describe it. He's
a bit of a cult hero, yeah.
He's the kind of guy who recognises how lucky he is to be as good as he is, to be able to play out there, and so just makes the most of it at all times. And attacks it with a joy, and he sort of lost that sense when he ended at Bath and went to Japan, and he talks about how Japan had really kind of fired up his love of rugby again, and then he gets a call from Steve Borthwick and buys into this project, which, and he took the glory in that last moment, and good for him, but so much went into that victory, so much detail. Not just on the day, but over the year. And I was fortunate, went up there a couple of times this season and spent a bit of time behind the scenes watching them train and sort of understanding what the kind of effort and vision was behind trying to lift the biggest club in the country off their knees. You know, we all know they would have been relegated had it not been for the salary cap offences, and to bring them back up to the top in two seasons. And so much has gone into it, and so much intricate thought from recruitment. Let's take recruitment to start with. I mean, Freddie Burns was one, but Richard Wigglesworth, Jasper Visa,
Liebenberg has scored in the final as well.
These guys, have been so important. Picking up Chris Ashton halfway through the season,
yeah, inspired that, wasn't it?
You know, and some really intelligent recruitment, and they have found an environment that Borthwick has created which is built on hard work. Like, they work harder than they've ever worked before, and Ellis Kenge will tell you, it's like, we thought we used to work hard before and then Steve arrived, but there's a levity to it, and that's one of the reasons why Burns is such an important character.
Energy giver, I think the phrase,
he lifts
it?
The mood. He's just, you know, he's a bit of a maverick sense of humour, a bit of an oddball, but in the best possible way, and they just struck this balance, and that detail and the thought that goes in every day of every week at Leicester, I thought shone on Saturday, where they imposed a sort of a Saracen style game plan on Saracens. Mark McCall said we got suffocated. Mako said we just couldn't, they didn't let us play. And I thought, period, halfway through the second half, Leicester had been in Saracens territory for 10-15 minutes and no points, and that's the moment you think Saracens are going to win this game, because that's how Saracens win.
Yeah.
They suck it up, they soak it up, and then they hit.
Yeah.
And there were moments when I talked earlier about all these mini battlegrounds, you thought that's the turning point. You know, Itoje wading through and the ball turnovers they were winning, backed up with a scrum penalty, and you thought that Saracens. It's now turning, they're back in it. And Leicester just went back down the other end and kept the pressure on. And we wrote about a couple of small details in the paper today to just illustrate, really. And I thought the Jasper Visa try, which the more I watched it on Sunday,
so clever, right,
the more
it?
Clever, or the more things you spot. You know, they 5 meter scrum penalty. The first thing that caught everyone by surprise was they didn't go for another scrum.
Yeah,
they opt for the quick tap. If you watch it, Wigglesworth just edges Genge in field a bit to create a slightly wider blindside. Mm. But all the body language, all the alignment suggests they were going to tap it and go to the left, go open. To the point that when Genge taps the penalty, Julio Montoya standing there with his hands on his hips on the blindside.
Selling a dummy, basically,
like, I'm not involved in this.
Yeah.
Genge taps it, veers to the right, Montoya latches on, Wigglesworth comes round, shapes to pass left, but Visas wraps around the corner, wave two on the blind, and they score. And it's clearly planned, and the execution of it and the illusion of it was just so clever.
Almost like an old school, I mean, we had the Barbars on Sunday, which we'll talk about, but their little like wall move from a penalty.
Yeah.
Not quite that sort of fun, but as you said, the detail was incredible. And actually, that particular try, where I was sitting at Twickenham, was right in front of me, and I think I bought the dummy as well. I was looking the other way.
Yeah,
and they went down the blind side. It was a great finish, wasn't it? And then Dan Cole on the latch just to push him over the line.
And then take the drop goal as another example. We've got Freddie Burns going to explain it from his perspective here, but Steve Borthwick is in the stand starting to wonder whether they're actually going to go for this drop goal at all. But actually, the composure they showed to just keep hold of the ball and work the field position until they were ready is just... Quite often we look at international teams in particular and think they're overcoached and they don't feel the game and they can't work it out for themselves on the field, and that wasn't the case here. They are very well coached, but as Freddie will describe, it was about feeling the moment on the pitch.
So here is Freddie Burns, and it actually looked like he wasn't going to drop back into the pocket, but this is him explaining why he did that and how he kicked that winning drop goal that won the Premiership.
A little bit we rehearsed and stuff, but not too much, I think. And I also don't like sitting in the pocket for ages, so that's why I was, you know, people saying, oh, you weren't really looking for it. In my head, I'm going, I know I'm hitting a drop goal. But the minute you sit in the pocket, you get a scrum half, whoever it is, lining you up. So I try to stay a little bit flatter and then drop a bit later. Even that said, I still have, I think, three or four blokes putting pressure on me. But I positioned myself nicely to the right of the ruck just so... If the pressure came from the outside, I knew that even if I hooked it a bit, I had a chance. And like I say, I didn't strike it. It's not the best looking drop goal in the world, but hey, when it goes over, it's nice. Like I said, don't care how they go over, shin or not. But
every fly half is Johnny Wilkinson moment.
Exactly, that was it. You know, I remember being 13 watching that, and it's just to be. I made noises after I hit that drop goal that I've never heard come out of my life in my life. I didn't know what to do. I was in disbelief.
So that was Freddie Burns, the hero of the Premiership final, talking about his match-winning drop goal. Just thinking, Alex, from the Saracens' perspective, they're so close to being Premiership champions at the first time of asking coming back after their relegation. Personally, I don't know if you'd agree with me here, but I think it's actually better for Premiership rugby, and Saracens fans won't agree with me, that they didn't win the league, that Leicester did, because I just think Saracens coming back and winning it the first time of asking, as we said, isn't an amazing look for everyone else, that they were sort of consigned to the Championship and then they come back and they're just the best team again. What do you make of that?
I think they were driven by this desire to prove they could win it clean, if that's the right word. Like that, they maintain internally and have done the whole way through that the titles that they won in the previous era were down to the spirit and the unity and the hard work and the tactics that they all put in. I'm sure that was a massive part of it, but it wasn't all of it, because you only had to look at the bench that they had on the weekend. You know, 2 or 3 years ago, they'd have been bringing on Will Skelton or Liam Williams, or, you know, the depth was enormous for them, and that rubbed off on everyone. I thought that the way they built back into this season after a slowish start, and the way that some of the players who were most affected by the relegation, like a Billy Vunipola, a Mako, an Owen Farrell, whose form really that it was affected, and you know, they, some of them lost their England places, and even when Owen was still being picked, he was struggling. I thought that was really impressive how they've grown back in, and they finished the season playing really, really well. But if you're looking for a, if you're looking for the perfect narrative on a season, you know, is a few of us were trying to find the right R word over the in the previews. Like, it's not redemption for Saracens, because they put their hands up, but it was of their own making. It is more so for Leicester. A club that was just on a downward spiral and really nearly went out of business, and
mismanagement from both sides, really, but for different means.
But for different reasons, and you know, for rugby reasons, the narrative, I think, just fits more comfortably with a lot of people of for the way that the Leicester did it. That said, you start next season, Saracens will be favourites to win the league.
Yeah, and they will be absolutely fizzing. Can you imagine the September October Saracens coming back? Having got that close.
Yeah.
Because I suppose also, I mean, I don't for one second think that they would have dipped off if they had won the title. But if they had won it, it would have been such a full stop on the whole saga that they could have parked it and said, right, that emotional energy has now passed and we've got to find something else. But they've almost now got a comma rather than a full stop, because they've still not sort of scratched the itch completely, have they?
They haven't, but I'm hoping that from our perspective, next season isn't dominated
Can they
come back? Can they prove what they've done? Like, for me, they have.
They've got new motivation, is what I mean.
They do. And one of their mantras has always been they don't judge the success of the season on whether they win the final or not. And I think that, I guess what I'm trying to say is that that applies very much to this season. Are they devastated they didn't win the league? Of course, to have come that close. But on the day, they didn't deserve to win it. Leicester were the better team. And over the course of the season, Leicester were the better team. So in that sense, the title has gone to the right place. But it will, knowing how they get their players going, how they utilise these experiences, they will be fired up next season.
Just going back to Leicester as well, it's quite interesting, isn't it? I'm trying to think, rack my brains, but it's not often that the Premiership winners are losing key men. They're losing their captain, Ellis Genge. They're losing George Ford, their talismanic fly half, who sadly had to hobble off in that game. And that's why we had that Freddie Burns moment, because Ford would have been on for the whole game otherwise. It's odd to say that they might have to transition again, but they probably will, won't they? Because the team, not all of it, but some of it's breaking up. And you might, if you're Ellis Genge, you might be thinking, oh, have I gone a bit early here? Maybe less so Lord George Ford, because he's moving home to Sale and he's got businesses, and I think he has been doing a bit of commuting from the northwest and stuff like that. But it's an interesting year for Steve Borthwick, especially with what might come after it, if he is this sort of anointed chosen one for the England job as well.
Yeah, I'm not convinced by that yet. We can talk about that. But I think Ellis Genge thing's really interesting, because one of the things he said after the match was, you know, he's going to miss that place, and he needs to return to Bristol. There are important family reasons, and that's fine. Doesn't mean he's not going to miss the interaction. He talked about how important Steve Borthwick has been for him. He said he's pushed me hard, he's kept me grounded, he's kept me going, and I hope that Steve will be happy to stay in touch with me for the next 12 months. Now, Borthwick being the bloke he is, I'm sure he will.
Maybe not in 2 weeks of the season.
A couple of weeks of the season, they might be on in a no comms mode. But in general, that's the kind of bloke that he is. I think Genge is going to feel the wrench massively. He's captained that team. He's lifted the trophy with Tom Youngs. He spoke really emotionally afterwards about some of the great Leicester names coming up to him and saying, "You're a true tiger." And he's like, "That means an enormous amount, almost more than the medal that was around his neck, because it showed that through the years when they were on the slide, when fans were chucking season tickets at the players, and like, he stuck there and has helped turn it round. It's going to be a real wrench for him to go, and it's going to be quite a shock rebuild in a lot of ways, because you don't replace Ellis Genge as a loose head prop, but also as a captain that easily, and it's one of the things that Saracens haven't had to do very much. Is, you know, they've evolved their team And
they've never really lost superstars, and we kind of know why now. But they never, the team never broke up much after they won anything.
And there's an enormous responsibility on Andre Pollard coming in to replace George Ford, to understand what it is that he's becoming, he's joining and being part of, and to take on that leadership role. He's a different. He could do a lot of the same things that Ford does. He's a different type of player. He's not quite as much of a triple threat as Ford is, albeit we didn't see Ford running that often, but it's always there.
He did in the semi, to be fair, didn't he?
Exactly, he did in the semi, and it is always there as a threat. So, you know, so Borthwick will, and knowing him as we do, by now, Monday morning, he's already thinking, right, how do we sort this for next season? How do we go again? It'll be a different dynamic. There'll be different voices, different leaders. Fascinating test of his coaching. And just on the point you made about England, I mean, obviously, after Saturday, there were comment pieces and tweets and discussions everywhere about
one man for the job.
There's only one man to replace Eddie in 2023, and he is unquestionably in pole position. Apart from anything, when the RFU have sort of outlined roughly how they view the succession plan, everything. There's only one man who ticks all the boxes.
Yeah.
One man who could potentially link up with an England management team at the next World Cup. It's only Borthwick. I have spoken to a couple of people who, pretty influential, who would just go, let's just take a pause for a second. No one's saying he couldn't do it. It's more, why rush? Like, is now the best time for him? He's 2 years into being head coach. Maybe it is, and maybe he's so far ahead of any other candidates and Andy Farrell in the eyes of the RFU that it is his job, and more power to him. All I'm saying is, let's just hold off for a second. He's only done it for 2 years. He's only 42. You can get these jobs too soon. Timing can be everything. He's ahead of schedule on his plan at Leicester. That's the other thing. They're only 2 years in. They've already won the league. That was not in their big strategic plan. Might he be better, and might England gain more if they wait and make that phone call in 2027?
Yeah.
I don't think there's any doubt that he has all the credentials to do the job, but if he was asked to do it in 2023, at the moment, it looks like that he's got everything needed to bring an intelligence and a human kind of man management side to that, the job that's required.
One thing, what we move on a little bit from the actual match itself and just thinking about the occasion. So we say it wasn't sold out. Maybe had a similar amount of fans to the Harlequins big game at Christmas, which came right out of COVID. And actually was quite a good effort to get 72,000 to that with all the regs and all that at that time just after Christmas. Premiership Rugby talked about it being a Super Bowl moment. Simon Massey-Taylor's talked to us about that, hasn't he? One of the head coaches, Mark McCall, didn't do any media at all in the week, which is disappointing. You wouldn't see that in lots of big grown-up sports around the world, that one of the top coaches doesn't say a word all week. Right. And he's a different type of character, isn't he? He's not Alex Anderson. He's not a sort of quotes machine and doesn't enjoy it. But where do we feel like the weekend was for Premiership Rugby as a sort of sports league?
I thought they put on a good show. I mean, around the rugby, I thought it was, anyone who went would have had a great day. I mean, you were there, if you can.
Same about
remember.
The rain, but yeah, they
but
can't
the,
control
but the music
that.
And the car park and the, you know, I think it was a great.
Did you hear Sophie Ellis-Bextor, by the way? Because I didn't see where she was.
She was out in the car park.
Was she right? Yeah, must have gone to the wrong one.
Feeling. so I thought as an occasion, it was excellent. But it always is. It always is excellent. The what we're talking about here is how you open it up to more people for more people to understand how good a day it is, and I think for it not to be sold out was a shame. I think the fact it was on ITV4
bumped off for Ascot, wasn't it?
Basically, Ascot, which they knew when they signed this deal, and that's next year it'll be on the main channel. That'll help. This is very in-house, kind of media chat, but they need to improve engagement with the public, and therefore that, you know, that comes through the media. So all the general kind of media interviews access were done Monday and Tuesday, very early in the week. as you say, Mark McCall didn't do anything. I think a massive amount can improve in terms of engagement to sell the final. You know, there are some brilliant stories in these teams, individual tales, and it felt like it was done on a shoestring.
Yeah,
and
agreed.
if you look at, as I have, the Super Bowl media access and the way that they try and tell their story in the culmination of the NFL, it is miles away from the way that the Premiership Rugby had their final week set up.
Yeah.
And I think they'll learn from it, because when we've spoken to Simon Massey Taylor and he's been on this pod, he gets it. He knows. He wants to.
And got progressive ideas about how to make it better.
He wants these stories to be told, and he's only been there 6 months, and so let's give him a chance. It was frustrating that it was as hard as it was to tell some of these great stories in the biggest week of the season. They fight on the back of the final by the fact that England always play the next day.
Yeah,
and
everyone moves on quite quickly.
Inevitably, that moves the agenda on so quickly.
Yeah.
That I don't think.
Their day in the sun is the Sunday papers and a bit of the Monday papers.
And we do our best in the Monday.
Yeah.
But if the England story is as big as it was, whether it's good or bad, that inevitably eats into the attention and the discussion about the final, when actually it deserves an enormous build up through the week and its place in the sun Sunday and Monday.
Also, I would say, I mean, maybe this is a bit media-y, but maybe it's related to the fans too, but it's nothing they can change now because they restructured the way the calendar works. But the season's too long and it ends too late, in my opinion.
That's absolutely true.
You start in September, and by the time you get... I mean, we were joking a month or so ago that we had 2 months left of our season still, and we've still got a month left of it with the tours to come. The tests are all now in July. The season used to finish on about the 28th of May. Champions League final day was often the same day as the Premiership final. And even just looking this week at newspaper coverage, which isn't the sort of be all and end all for it all, but our place and lots of other places had barely any rugby at all in the early part of this week, and it was all about Johnny Bairstow's cricket innings. It was all about the Nations League football. It was all about Ascot, and it was all about swimming and anything else, and it wasn't about rugby. And this is meant to be the absolute pinnacle of the English club rugby season, and it's getting swallowed up by all these other essentially summer events. And they're lucky actually as well that there isn't a Summer World Cup now, because everyone would be in beer gardens watching England play Iran or whatever. It's only that's now in the winter that they've lucked out and they're not getting beaten by that too.
I couldn't agree more. We're dealing with a season that's too long, that sags at points. It's battling to retain people's interest all the way through, and then when you get to the climax of it, there's Matthew Fitzpatrick winning the US Open, there's England winning Test matches, as you say, there could be a Football World Cup, and in most summers, most every other summer, there'll be a big football tournament. We've done it to try and align with Super Rugby and the Southern Hemisphere, but actually I don't think it's helping the Northern. And I know that there are executives who agree with that. Let's see, once the global calendar, the international dates in the global calendar are set, it gives a chance to readjust. I'd go to a shorter season, and you know, these games have been played in beautiful weather. You know, it was a bit grey on the final day, but it can lend to some wonderful rugby. But if you're trying to find your window, I'm not sure it helps to be culminating at the end of June.
Well, we better wrap up our Premiership Rugby chat there, because Eddie Jones is just about to announce his touring party for the three test trip to Australia. We'll get into a bit of that in a second and talk about that Barbar's defeat, 52-21. Good Lord.
Yeah, well, it's another step towards the World Cup. And the balance for the World Cup's going to be about good, experienced players with youth and enthusiasm, and their enthusiasm coming through. So I think it's a nice balanced squad. Guys like Billy and Danny Kerr have deserved their recall. We'll add the experience to the squad, and then you've got young guys like Arundel, Will Joseph, Schickling. You know, there's a whole cast of them that are going to add some enthusiasm to the squad. So yeah, we like the balance.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Right, so that was England head coach Eddie Jones, and as you heard him say there, the top line from it was Billy Vunipola is back in the England squad for the first time since the 2021 Six Nations. Been a long old time. If he was on the winning side on Saturday at the Premiership Final, he may well have been man of the match. And Danny Kerr has been retained too after his exile. He came off the bench against the Barbarians on Sunday. So initial thoughts on those two returning, Alex?
Well, both have earned it. I mean, no question, whatever we think of the reasons of the consistency of selection, which has been a bit all over the place at times, you can't argue that the way that Danny's played since he last played for England, really, you know, winning a league with Harlequins, and you know, I think he's probably playing the best rugby of his career, deserves inclusion as a senior figure in the scrum half cohort going to Australia with no Ben Youngs. He'll be there with Harry Randall and Jack Van Portfleet, who wasn't involved for Leicester at the weekend, but they rate him enormously highly. And Billy, well, as you say, 25 carries. He led the Saracens assault on Saturday, and he's been, as we said earlier, actually, he's been growing and growing through this season, rediscovering the old Billy. And I just think back to the World Cup 2019, and he wasn't fully fit and he wasn't firing, and Eddie was picking him in every game in the hope that the next one would be the day that it all clicks and he's back. And it never quite happened. And in the end, Billy was one of that group of five senior players, four from Saracens, who were dropped by Eddie.
He wrote that, "I don't think some of them will ever play for England again," and he's almost picked all of them.
At the start of the season. And over the course of the year, they've now all come back. You know, Billy's now on tour. Mako's back.
Jamie George.
What a final Mako had as well, by the way.
Yeah.
Jamie George has re-established himself in the team. George Ford, not sure if he would have gone on tour or not, but he's injured. He's been back in. Daly came back in for a bit. He's not here. I just think England need both Billy and Danny Kerr in Australia as well. You know, if you look at the deficiencies they had in the Six Nations, that they lack pace and they lack power. And with Billy at number eight, different type of number eight to Alex Dombrandt, who is injured and not touring. Different type of number eight. But if you get 25 gain line busting carries out of Billy Vunipola on a hard track in Perth, England are going to be on the front foot. And they've got Cock and a Singer in the squad, who I have a real sense may well start. You've got Johnny May back involved again. He wasn't there in the Six Nations.
Both scored on the weekend. Yeah.
So they've suddenly got, when Eddie talks about gas and guts, they have both. They're missing players, but they have both of those back, even without Manu. They're both critically important selections, I think.
So just on the administration of the squad, I suppose, as Alex mentioned, there's no Ben Youngs, and there's obvious reasons why he would benefit from a summer off, with the tragic news about his sister-in-law, Tiffany, dying earlier this month. It was clarified by Eddie that he's been rested for this summer, so that wasn't a sort of dropping, which makes lots of sense. And Joe Marler's not on a tour either, hasn't been on a tour for a while. The last trip away, really, was the World Cup, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm not surprised he's not going.
Yeah. And then Alex Dombrandt injured his knee on Friday in training, was in a knee brace at the Barbarians game, so hence Billy Vunipola's call-up. It would have been interesting if Dombrandt was fit, whether Billy would have made it.
I think he would have done.
Yeah.
I think England need him, and I think the way that he's been playing, if he's got his mind right, I mean, we talk about media access. Billy hasn't done an interview all season.
18 months, maybe.
And a lot of the time, we've talked to, you know, Billy's such a, he wears his heart on his sleeve, and he's very introspective, and I think Eddie has just suggested to him, just keep your head down, you know, show me what you can do on the pitch. Don't beat yourself up in public, which is quite often what he does.
Yeah,
you know,
he's
very, very self-critical. And through that whole period of where he was struggling really for his best, he'd be very open. Whether the two are connected, I think they might be, because he's just decided to keep himself focused on his rugby and England. I think he would have been picked because of how well he's playing and because of what England need to do to win in Australia. Eddie's gone back to a couple of old favourites, if you like, one of whom he sort of fell out with Danny, but they've patched things up, and England need him.
I think on the care pick, really pleased for him as a bloke, because he's been playing fantastic rugby since he got dropped. And I think he's been freed up by being dropped and stopped overthinking it. But what I would say is that I hope for his sake that this isn't a gratuitous pick to keep him out. I mean, the Barbas thing might have been a bit different, but if you're picking Danny Kerr in a squad, play him. Mm. There's no point taking a 35-year-old on a tour and not giving him a shot. And I think he will get one.
Oh, everything that we heard today from Eddie suggests he's right in the mix to start, and I think
he should be. He's a form nine in the country. Well, you'd probably say with him and Mitchell, who isn't actually in the squad,
who isn't there, who's been brilliant for Northampton. Yeah, they're listing 10 injured players, but if you go through the likely starting 15, it's a step forward from the Six Nations in my view, because Freddie Stewart will start fullback.
Yeah,
Johnny May will start on one wing.
Watson, if he's absolutely fully fit and firing, as a starter, isn't he? But hasn't been for a long time.
No.
And isn't going.
So then the other wing, you're looking at Jack Noel or Joe Cockensinger. You know, different types of player, but that's the power. That's the kind of the nuggety fighting.
That's the guts.
That's the guts, yeah. And May's the gas. Midfield, you're going to have Marcus Smith, Owen Farrell and Joe Marchant.
And Tuilagi, as ever, was always going to play, but he's not fit. And we were talking the other week about Slade on the podcast, and then after we'd recorded that, he had shoulder surgery, so he's not going either.
So, yeah, and I think Farrell's inclusion will be really important to Marcus Smith. To just, again, a different type of 12 to the one he's used to at Harlequins. Not an absolute sort of monster 12 like Andre Estes.
And like gainline busting 12.
But it'll just free him, give him that extra second of space, and they'll interchange. And then nine is Randall or Kerr. I don't think Van Portfleet will start a test, but it's Randall or Kerr. And then up front, even without some of the big names, they're going to start with Genge, Luke Cowan-Dickey, who just walked past us, or Jamie George.
Yeah. Tighthead's maybe an issue. Shickling's going.
They'll start with Will Stewart.
And your sinker's out.
Joe Hayes will be on the bench.
Yeah.
You'd think second row would be Maratoji and
Charlie Yules.
And Johnny Hill.
Yeah, Johnny Hill. Yeah,
Maratoji,
yeah,
Johnny Hill probably.
And Laws at six.
Back row would be Laws at six, Curry seven, Billy at eight. With
good team,
really.
With
options of Underhill and Willis. Charlie Yules will probably be on the bench. You'd think the backup hooker will be British and Irish Lion, whichever way they go. They've got, you know, and there's some other interesting, like Guy Porter's really interesting.
Yeah, so he's pick. One of the uncapped guys, first call up for him from Leicester, yeah.
Veteran of Sydney University and going back down under. But
actually born in Kensington, I think, but spent time in Aussie, yeah.
But what a season that he's had with Leicester, and England are looking at him as a 12-13, but as he's shown for Leicester, he can play on the wing. He's just the perfect sort of bench type player, and it was really interesting listening to Eddie there about why he picked some of these younger Leicester players, and he talked about how they are of test match standard. Like they're playing, they know how to win test matches, most of them haven't played a test match.
No.
Van Poffert hasn't played a test match. Porter hasn't played a test match. But Hayes has played...
He played the USA or Canada, yeah.
But then, in the same conversation, Eddie described the final as a test match.
Yeah.
Because of the...
It kind of was, though, wasn't it?
It felt like it, because of the intensity and the physicality of it. And they were excellent in there. So that connection between Eddie and Borthwick and into Leicester, Eddie will trust a lot of those
judgment,
players
yeah.
and trust the judgment of Steve Borthwick.
So the other couple to just mention there that were in the squad that are listed as apprentices are the 19-year-olds for London Irish, Henry Arundel and Will Joseph. And I think the usual form with apprentices is probably not going to play unless they're absolutely sensational. He said he might think about it, but at the moment, unlikely that they're going to play.
I can't see them playing. I mean, he's got Stewart start at 15, and then if Stewart is injured, then Furbank will probably start at 15.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have to be a crisis, I think, just because of the he likes with players who he really identifies as the future. He's very, very measured in the steps that he takes.
I mean, Genge and Sinclair were the 2016. They weren't, I suppose, asterisked,
but
they were taken and didn't play
for the same reason. Yeah, and we've seen it with Marcus Smith. Didn't go on a tour, but just very measured in how he introduces them.
Johnny Hill as well was 2018 mm-hmm. South Africa, got on the bench and was one of those guys that never actually got a cap. And he was speaking in camp on Friday and saying how much he thinks he matured, just seeing what the standard was, seeing what guys like Mike Brown and Owen Farrell and Chris Robshaw were doing, and then going, oh God, I've got to really step up.
And from talking to players who've been in that position, to be able to commit to the training and the environment without the pressure of trying to win selection is really useful. I think like Henry Arundel can go down and he can try things in training and he can make a mistake and he can make the wrong decision, but without the pressure of thinking, oh, I've just cost myself a place in the team. And I think it helps bring the best out of them. And if they need them, then they'll be there. And everything we hear, yeah, we've seen Will Joseph play a bit for Irish, but everything you hear from in the camp, like, there are guys going, wow, this kid. And we all know what Henry Arundel can do with the pace that he's got. They're only 19. I can see them both being in a World Cup squad in, 18 months' time? But Eddie will take care of them to make sure that they're blooded at the right time.
So England are now... We need to change our language maybe in the paper if we're talking about getting on the flight, because they're getting on the flights, because there's four of them, I think, because there's so much demand for seats to Australia that they're going on four separate planes over Tuesday and Wednesday and arriving, all told, on Thursday, I think, in Perth. And then so first test is July the 2nd in Perth.
Yeah.
Then they go to Brisbane for the second one, and then they end at the Sydney Cricket Ground. Massive tour for Eddie Jones, surely, isn't this?
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah.
Quite a few parallels of 2018 with a poor Six Nations. Then you come through and get beaten easily by the Barbars.
Yeah.
And that trip was South Africa. They lost the first two and it was kind of vote of confidence time, bringing up Bill Sweeney and people like that. It wasn't Bill Sweeney at that point, was it? But Andy Coslett, I think it was. And asking, do you have the confidence in Eddie Jones? And they sort of did. And then Danny Cipriani and Johnny May won them that final rainy test in Cape Town. It saved the bacon a bit. And then we know what they did in 2019. But is there a feeling you're actually going on the tour, Alex, and you and Steve will be there, Steve and Jones for the Sunday Times, covering it fully, that if England lose the first one, it starts getting a bit big on them?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. When they went to Australia 6 years ago, on the back of a Grand Slam, where they bounced back from the World Cup, won the Slam, went down there, Eddie was front foot, this is body line, we're going after them. And then they lived it, and I guess Haskell was the embodiment of that trip, just smashing people, goal line defensive stand, really like emphatic performance. This time round, they need to do the same, but they're doing it on the back of some really disappointing results, and this is where the RFU sort of explanation for their confidence in this setup will be put to the test. England came third in the Six Nations, but really there's no difference between third and fifth. They lost three out of
five. Same results, yeah.
They lost three out of five. But the feeling and the messaging from inside Twickenham was strong, positive steps forward, none of which we could really see on the outside. Well, this is the tour where they need to deliver upon those that vision, because if they come back having been beaten, and the thing about the Wallabies is we don't quite know what they're going to be. They'll be stronger than they were last November because they've got Quade Cooper, Samu Karevi, Marika Korobeti. They're all back involved. They were out in Japan last November. The Brumbies have been really good in Super Rugby. Were a drop goal away from, or a missed drop goal away from qualifying for the Super Rugby final. They'll be at home. They'll be pumped because it's England.
Sold out grounds. Eddie keeps mentioning those, doesn't
he? And they'll probably sense a bit of blood. And it's an enormous tour for England, yeah.
Yeah. Just on the bar bars, I was at that on Sunday. There's a different context always to bar bars games, and depends who the bar bars pick. And that 2018 team they picked was stacked, wasn't it? With, I think it was back row with Justin Tipperick in it, and Reece Webb was at scrum half, and Finn Russell, and Semi Rendranda, and Chris Ashton scored a hat trick. But this time it was the sort of the French. In France they were calling it the bar bars Britannique. But it was coached, obviously, by Galtier and Edwards. And they absolutely took England to the cleaners. And it was looking through your finger stuff at times. I mean, 37 minutes in, Will Skelton gets sent off and you go, ah, that's going to kill the game then. Cut to the Barbers scoring five more tries, extending their lead from 3 points to 31 by the end. And if you're an England player, you're standing under the sticks watching a bloke you know, George Cruz, kicking goals with his back heel, and then kicking one after the eighth try with all his team slow clapping him. That is embarrassing.
They were taking the mick out of England. I mean, you wrote it in your match report.
Yeah.
They were laughing at them.
And Eddie afterwards tried to explain, look, we're trying something else. We're not going to run the ball from our own 22 and get pumped by 50 in Australia. But I think on the back of a poor Six Nations, an attack that's misfiring, the defence was all over the place. And that is, they keep saying there's a young England team, but that was not a young, inexperienced team when you've got Johnny May, you've got Courtney Laws, you've got Tom Curry, Sam Underhill, you've got people who've played in World Cup finals. Whether that's the Barbals or not, that is a shocker.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it was. And there's no. It's easy afterwards to go, well, this is only an England 15. It's not really a. They didn't sell it as an England 15. It was an England.
He tried to on Friday before the game and said, look, lads, it's not
a Barbarians team.
But. Yeah. And I think in 2018 it was written that they were losing six in a row because then they went out to South Africa and lost the first two. And he'd always correct that and say, no, it's five. Come on, don't count the Barbarians. Yeah. But don't count them when you win them then as well. I mean,
you called it a practice match.
Yeah, and a festival game, is what he said.
And I get that to a degree. I mean, it isn't what they'll face in Perth in a fortnight's time. It isn't quite the same intensity. But they have been in camp for... Like the majority of that's going to be camp for a long time, and they're either top. I mean, like one Will Collier fascinated me. A week earlier, I was at Stonex Stadium for the semi-final, and he was responsible for demolishing the Saracen scrum. Mm. He was unbelievable, and then he got he would have had the Shepherd's Crook after 25 minutes or something. Yeah.
And he got substituted twice actually in the game. Poor bloke, because he came back on because Patrick Schickling had to have an HIA when Skelton hit him in the face and got sent off, and then so Collier came back on, and then Collier got substituted again. For Will Goodrick-Clark, who's usually a loose head. And now Collier's not on the trip, he's not on the tour. I mean, to me, I mean, not a scrum expert, but it looked like Bevan Rodd was struggling a little bit more. But we know that Eddie's really keen on Bevan Rodd, so possibly protect the young bloke in that one, because he was getting working over by the Georgian tighthead.
Basically, it doesn't help, does it? I mean, whether it's a festival game or not, coming off the back of a disappointing Six Nations, and you've got a massive tour ahead with a lot of pressure, and results the need to deliver results is getting greater and greater. That just doesn't help.
Absolutely not. Right, so we're going to have loads more over the summer on England. As we were saying, Alex and Steve are going to be going down under. They're flying off this weekend. Are you looking forward to it? It's going to be a good trip.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
What's the last tour you went on?
World Cup. Yeah. I didn't get to do Lions because we had to send reduced numbers to South Africa. So I'm looking forward to it. I've not been to Australia since 2000.
You lived there for a bit, did you?
I lived there
and worked.
2002 to 2004. It was my first job as a reporter. It was actually in Australia for the Press Association. timed it brilliantly. Ashes tour, Rugby World Cup.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Loved it. And then came back in 04. And then last time I was there was 2010, England's tour in 10 when Jono was head coach. They lost. They absolutely murdered Australia up front in Perth and lost the game somehow. And then won in Sydney. Johnny came off the bench, kicked the winning penalty through the same set of posts that he'd kicked the drop goal. There were two midweek games on that trip, and then a trip over to Napier to play the Maori.
Times change.
5-game tour. That was good. Yeah, so it'd be fun to go back. And I've not seen a game of rugby at the Sydney Cricket Ground before. I've seen cricket and Aussie rules.
They haven't really played there properly since the 80s, I don't think.
No.
So there you go.
No.
So yeah, Alex and Steve will be recording from hotel rooms and bars and all sorts of stadiums
and beaches
and everything. So we're crying them loads of rivers that they're getting on a nice trip while we're sitting at home.
I'm taking the direct flight to Perth.
17
London.
Hours in a window seat.
At
good
the
luck.
Moment, yeah.
If anyone wants to give him an upgrade, he's all ears.
Yeah, I'm flying... Qantas QF1 to Perth. No, I
any
mean,
kind ruck listeners.
I just think it would be quite an interesting experience because Lions toured 2 years, World Cup 4 years. There'll be thousands and thousands of rugby fans flying down there. So
yeah.
I'll report back on what it's like being in that on that direct flight to Perth.
So the next time you hear from Alex and Steve, they'll be on the ground down under. But now we're going to wrap up this week's episode with the God or Goddess of the Week. Right, so while we think of the God or Goddess of the Week nomination, just have a quick mention of the Stormers who won the United Rugby Championship, the first ever United Rugby Championship. Stephen Kitsoff lifting that new, slightly odd trophy that Al Dimmitt was talking about last week. And just interesting from maybe a sort of more British-y perspective that they're coming into the Champions Cup next season. That'd be a bit different.
I think it'll make it feel closer to home. I mean, I know our listeners in Wales or Scotland or Ireland are used to playing against South African franchises. They did it in the Rainbow Cup and now in URC. In England, watching that final, it still felt like it could have been a Currie Cup final or Super Rugby final. It felt like a Southern Hemisphere event. Seeing the Stormers come to play Premiership teams in Europe, seeing the Bulls do the same, I think will help engagement in that competition. And whether you like it or not, they're going to be a force in Europe, aren't they?
Live Ruck from Cape Town is in the wish list for, I think, next season. But we'll
sure.
leave that there. That's one for our paymasters. But God or Goddess of the Week time, Alex. Are you going obvious or are you going...
I don't know how... Well, am I going obvious? I think you have to. I mean,
yeah.
I'm happy to nominate somebody else, but Freddie Burns is going to win it, right? Because he had the glory moment and... He's just such a good bloke, and he represents a lot of what we would like to see in our in the heroes that the kids can watch. He's personable, he's approachable, he's relatable, and he worked so hard for that moment that delighted to nominate him. Of course, he was able to do it on the back of some other incredible performances on the day. Jasper Visa, Julian Montoya, in particular, I thought were outstanding. And then Steve Borthwick has created the whole environment.
Yeah, so. I was going to say, if we were doing God of the Week, probably Freddie Burns, and if it was God of the Season, it's maybe Steve Borthwick. So we can leave it at that. Congratulations to Leicester Tigers. You're finally back on the top of English rugby after 9 years in the wilderness. Almost got relegated. Now you're champions of England. So go and enjoy it if you're a fan of that team. We'll be back, as we said, next week. Looking forward to all the summer tours. Alex is going to be on the ground in Perth, so is Stephen Jones. But for now, this has been a live ruck from Richmond, the England team hotel, and we're just off to soak up some more of the sun before Alex goes on holiday. But thanks so much for listening.
Holiday.
He goes on a working holiday, a working tour. But thanks so much for listening. Please subscribe, tell your friends, share it on social media, like and subscribe, and join us all next time. Thank you very much.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts.
That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.